Hi, this is Peter Dugan. The episode you're about to hear is dedicated to the memory of Kalen Ratzlaff, a beloved staff member at From the Top. He was warm, accessible, incredibly caring and generous as a colleague and friend. He approached his work with a very deep sense of purpose, and he had a laugh that lit up the office like fireworks. We lost him too soon, and he is sorely missed. Kalen, this is for you.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, pianist Peter Dugan.
Thanks, Joanne, and thank you for joining me today for our second home studio show, otherwise known as Blanket Fort Show Number 2. As we all went into lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic, the staff at From the Top got together and devised a special high-tech recording kit, a kind of studio in a box, and we sent it out to our selected young musicians. We then coached them on how to use it, and we made this episode you're listening to right now from that material. And it's called a blanket fort show due to the fact that in order to get a good sound in their makeshift home studios, all of our young musicians had to pad their home recording spaces with blankets and pillows. I've got to say, this show was pretty therapeutic to make during these isolating times, and I hope some of that good feeling translates to all of you right now. The first young person we're going to meet is 16-year-old violinist Eunice Lee from Irvine, California. This girl is such a solid player. Every take she did with us was basically note perfect, and her rhythm was so precise, it was easy for me to follow along. Here she is doing a long-distance collaboration with me, and we're performing the Caprice Basque by Pablo de Sarasate.
Thank you.
16-year-old violinist Eunice Lee from Irvine, California, performed Caprice Bosque by Pablo de Sarasate. This is pianist Peter Dugan, and I performed with her, but remotely, through a back-and-forth exchange of recordings, given that this show is being made during the coronavirus pandemic. She and I sat down afterwards to talk through a video conference call. Eunice, that was such an amazing performance. I just watched you play that at your home, and your precision is just mind-boggling, and yet you also have this fiery passion that you bring to that Caprice. Just beautiful, beautiful performance. So given that we're in the middle of this pandemic and we can't travel very much for the moment, let's take a little time to do a different sort of travel using the technology of storytelling and conversation, and let's go visit some of your favorite places, shall we?
Okay, sounds good.
You told us that some of your best memories that you've made anywhere have been in Aspen, Colorado. And that's something that we actually share in common, probably for the same reason, which was the Aspen Music Festival in school. Why was that such an important time for you at Aspen?
The first summer I went there, I still had a lot of fun, but I went with my mom and my sister. And that was great, but I would have liked it if I stayed by myself, I think. So then this past summer, I went by myself and I stayed in the dorms there, and I had so much fun meeting people and making lots of memories. And also, like, just Aspen itself is so beautiful.
So do you feel that that summer and the independence that you sort of felt and the connection you felt with your friends, has that changed you in any way?
Actually, I've heard my parents say that I've changed ever since I came back from Aspen.
Really?
I don't know if it's in a good way or a bad way, but I've heard that a lot. So.
Did they elaborate in how they saw that change?
I think it was more of me not listening to them and doing whatever I want to do.
Well, you know, you're growing up and you're becoming that independent thinker, and that's a beautiful thing. So let's go to a different place now, a different travel destination. Las Vegas.
Oh, I love Vegas.
Okay, I have to say we don't necessarily see eye to eye on that, but I'm really curious what you love about Vegas.
Whenever I go to Vegas, it's always me not having my violin. When I was little, I used to absolutely hate practicing. So whenever we would go to Vegas, I would never have to bring my violin. And it was, we would go for like 3 to 4 days, 2 to 3 days. So when I was there, it was just a complete free time. I could do whatever I want without having to practice or like having like that mind of, oh, I need to practice now or something.
Right. I love the idea that Aspen for you is a place to bring the violin and leave the family at home. And Vegas is a place, bring the family, leave the violin at home.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to a different destination now, Korea. I know you have family there and it's a really meaningful place for you.
All of my family is in Korea. My relatives, my cousins, and like my grandma, grandpa all live in Korea.
What are some things you love to do there?
I think since I love Korean food so much, I love going to like different restaurants and like the market. Sometimes they have so much good food. So whenever I come back, I always gain like 30 pounds.
And I know that your grandmother there has a sort of special music dream for you for Korea, right?
Yeah. My grandma lives in front of the Seoul Art Center, and it's her dream. And it's also one of my dreams, I think, to play there and to have like my poster like posted on like the wall of the place. Oh my God.
It'll happen. And then you'll get to keep that poster and frame it in your music room and intimidate all of your private students when they come in for their lesson. They'll see that big poster there hanging up and they'll be like, man, my teacher Eunice is a big deal. well, thank you so much for being with us, Eunice.
Thank you.
For the last 15 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded over $3 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Peter.
Thanks, Joanne. Next up, one of the youngest classical guitarists From the Top has ever featured. This is 11-year-old Emilia Diaz-Delgado from Santa Clara, California, performing Etude 11 by Héctor Villa-Lobos. Eleven-year-old guitarist Emilia Diaz-Delgado from Santa Clara, California, performed Etude 11 by Héctor Villa-Lobos. During this time of social distancing, she recorded that performance in her own home. Emilia, you performed that so beautifully. For 11 years old, you play with such poetry. You know, that was a really haunting and beautiful performance. Is that your living room that I'm seeing you in?
Well, yes, it is.
Does it feel different than it normally does now that you have all this equipment in there?
Well, yes, but if I just look the other way, I'm like, okay, I'm just playing for the sofa as usual.
Playing for the sofa just as usual. I love that. So you're just 11, but You have really discerning taste when it comes to music and performers. For instance, you have very interesting thoughts about this guy. This is El Diablo Suelto by Heraclio Fernandez. But who is this performer that I'm playing for you now through our video conference?
John Williams. He's my favorite guitarist.
Yeah, so John Williams is this legendary Australian guitarist, not to be confused with the American composer, who's also a legend and has the same name. Why is he so special, and how is he different for you than maybe some of the other pro guitarists out there?
I've heard him since I was little, since I was like 6 or 5.
Right.
Maybe it was also like, I didn't like practicing so much because in the first place it hurt my fingers, and I was like, that hurt, I don't want to do it. But I also want to play guitar because I like how it sounds.
Right.
So I look at his videos and he makes it seem so effortless. So I get to think, well, if I practice a lot, at some point it will be easy to play. So I'm going to practice a lot, so at some point it will be easy.
Right. So he inspired you to want to practice.
Yeah.
And also, I know you talk about the fact that some musicians tend to emote a lot with their face, with their body. But you think John Williams, when he plays, it's a little different than that, right?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of musicians who like just around, you know, make such complicated faces.
Yep.
And most people seem to think that that means that they're really feeling the music. And, well, John Williams never does any of that. But I can still tell that he really enjoys it and he really connects with it.
You know, I think that the discernment you show in terms of how you admire John Williams' musicianship, that comes out in the way you feel about another art form, which is opera, right? And that was really your introduction to classical music in a way.
Yes. My maternal grandparents, they live in Austria, and they really love opera and classical music. So it was my grandmother who introduced me to opera.
Mm-hmm.
So she watched Borodin's Prince Igor with me. And I liked it so much, I asked her to make a costume. I think it was one of the ladies in Veil.
There are a lot of kids your age who like to dress up as Disney princesses or, you know, Harry Potter characters. You're dressing up after a Borodin opera.
Yeah.
You also dressed up as a character from Magic Flute once.
Yeah, I dressed up as Papageno.
But then you went and you saw it live and you weren't so pleased with this particular production that you saw, right?
Well, yeah, the San Francisco Opera in, I think, 2016, they made a production of The Magic Flute. So I was, like, so excited to be there. And then it turns out I hear the first song, you know, like, Tamino screaming for someone to help him because he's going to be bitten by a giant snake or something.
Right, right.
And I'm like, that is not German. Why did they do to my Magic Flute? So it turns out they translated it into English. So, I mean, yeah, it fits with the rhythm, but it doesn't have the same, you know, lyrical
right.
feeling.
Right. Well, you're quite the purist, and, you know, I can't blame you for that. I think it's wonderful that you're getting out there and absorbing not just great guitar music, but opera, and you're thinking critically about it, and you're turning into such a well-rounded and thoughtful, independent musician, and you're only 11 years old, and that's really inspiring to all of us. So keep it up.
Thanks.
We're now going to travel to Elizabethtown, Kentucky, and to the home of the 18-year-old saxophonist Jacob Peary. Jacob is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists, and here he is performing the second and third movements of Tableau de Provence by Paul Maurice.
Thank you.
The second and third movements of Tableau de Provence by Paul Maurice, performed by 18-year-old saxophonist Jacob Peary, along with yours truly, collaborating through technology and the exchange of recordings on the piano. When I called Jacob to interview him, we talked a bit about the fact that he, unlike a lot of From the Top kids, does not come from a musical family. So I asked him if that ever feels like a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, no matter where you come from, if you work hard, you can always achieve the same thing as anyone else. But I definitely think, you know, it's not as easy because when you're trained so young from a musical family, you start learning piano and you start getting pitch training and all these different things. And you just get more time on the instrument you choose to play as well. Versus when you start later, you don't have that pitch training and the piano experience, and you're really trying to focus on your instrument, get the practice in and get as many hours in as you can.
And how have you managed to overcome those challenges?
Definitely. I think ear training is such a huge thing. You know, something that's always something I've been trying to work on. I started later in high school, junior year, and I started by just sleeping with drones in my ear so I could try and memorize the pitches and just feel it natural. And I think that's, you know, such a big challenge is getting that pitch in your ear when you weren't raised like that, weren't raised and trained to listen to that kind of stuff.
Man, it's so amazing because there are people who fall asleep, you know, listening to Bach or Mozart or something, and you're just listening to a single pitch droning. That's discipline right there. I imagine that this quarantine time has been tough on you, especially you, because you describe yourself as a people person. And I know that for you, actually, people is sort of, that's the reason why you love music.
Well, I think that that's kind of the reason I feel everyone goes into music is because either they love music or they love the people or both. In my case, of course, I love music and the people, but I love music because of the people brought together. All the honor bands that people do, the orchestra concerts, when people get called in, they're around a whole new set of people and they're meeting new people. And quarantine's definitely been more of a challenge, but sometimes now that we're getting to talk online, I think everyone's getting to know each other better because now pretty much all we can do is talk and, you know, play for each other on our instruments, but things are getting more personal now and you're getting to know your friends more. I guess that's one good thing of quarantine.
So you're pretty into the idea of interdisciplinary artistic performances and the way that a performance like that can connect with an audience. You did a concert that was themed around a message related to gun violence.
Mm-hmm. So in 2019, the Interlochen Arts Academy took a trip to New York City to perform in Carnegie Hall. And that trip was called Resolve. Then it was focused around gun violence. And we played a very famous piece by Frank Tekeli that talks about it. And it was written about the Columbine shooting. We had a writer that went and read his whole piece aloud. And it was a very powerful concert.
Any specific moment from that experience that really stuck with you and maybe made you think about the power that you have as an artist?
I think the delicate phrases of that specific piece, I mean, when you're listening to it, there's such a story behind it. For instance, Frank Tekeli talked about how there's an alto saxophone solo, and then the same phrase plays again without the alto saxophone solo. And that was because, unfortunately, the alto saxophonist was one of the victims of the Columbine shooting. And so it was represented for him being there. And then when the phrase came again, he wasn't there anymore. Mm. And when they sat down in a rehearsal after all the mess was over and everyone started to calm down a little more, then the director saw that he wasn't there. And things like that, when we know the story and we're trying to get that across, makes it so powerful. And that's the kind of moments that I think the audience and us always remember.
It's beautiful how music can bring healing and can make sense of even a terrible tragedy. And you know, in a way, that's what we're doing here today, you know, creating music and art, even in the midst of this COVID pandemic. And hopefully our music will bring some folks some solace and comfort during these times. And I certainly appreciated having you with us today, Jacob, and loved getting to know you.
I hope it impacts them as well. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Daily joy. Couldn't we all use a bit of daily joy in our daily routines? Well, if you sign up for From the Top's Daily Joy video series, you'll have incredibly joyful minute-long music videos delivered to you daily. Sign up at fromthetop.org and cheer up.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Senior Helpers, providing families with personalized in-home care for seniors and those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. Committed to helping loved ones remain safe and independent at home. SeniorHelpers.com. And from the Candida Fund, supporting individual dignity and sustainable communities through investments in transformative leaders and ideas. Learn more at KENDEDAFund.org.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week is our second Blanket Fort episode. We're calling it that because everything you're hearing, music and interviews, has been recorded in the homes of our young musicians using some pretty high-tech gear sent to them by us here at From the Top. The name Blanket Fort comes from the padding we're asking our kids to put up around their makeshift home recording studios to create a better sound. Coming up, a teenage pianist from Redwood City, California, performs an operatic transcription by Franz Liszt. Here again is our host, pianist Peter Dugan.
Thanks, Joanne. I've been asked to contribute my own musical offering to today's show, made during this pandemic. And during the previous Blanket Fort show we produced, I played a bit of Johann Sebastian Bach's music. We got some positive feedback about that, so I'm going to perform another movement from the same suite. This is the Fiery Courant from the French Suite No. 5 in G major by Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you.
From the Top musicians want to change the world for the better, and we're here to support them. That's why From the Top offers leadership training to all of our young musicians, and we're out there with them doing community engagement projects across the country. Learn more about all our programs at fromthetop.org. Podcasts of From the Top, featuring music and interviews not included in the broadcast, are available every week at fromthetop.org. Peter.
We've got new music written by a young composer from Los Angeles up next. His name is William Jay, he's 18, and he's one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. He wrote this piece titled Alabaster Wool as an assignment while a fellow in the LA Phil's Nancy and Barry Sanders Composer Fellowship Program. The assignment was to write a piece based on a text or poem. William chose a poem by Emily Dickinson titled It Sifts from Leaden Sieves. We're going to hear three members of the LA-based Lyris Quartet perform it now. Violinist Alyssa Park, violist Luke Maurer, and cellist Timothy Liu. But before the music begins, here's William reading the Dickinson poem.
It Sifts from Leaden Sieves by Emily Dickinson. It sifts from leaden sieves. It powders all the wood. It fills with alabaster wool. The wrinkles of the road. It makes an even face of mountain and of plain. Unbroken forehead from the east onto the east again. It reaches to the fence. It wraps it rail by rail till it has lost its leases. It deals celestial veil to stump and stack and stem. A summer's empty room. Acres of joints where harvests were, reckless but for them. It ruffles wrists of posts as ankles of a queen, then stills its artisans like ghosts, denying they have been.
Thank you.
Alabaster Wool, performed by members of the Lyris Quartet and written by 18-year-old composer William Jay. The performance of William's piece is made possible with support from the ASCAP Foundation's Irving Caesar Fund. William and I spoke via video conference. William, I love that piece. It's so colorful. It's creative in the way you take these three instruments and turn it into an entire soundscape. I can't believe that that was just a trio. It was such a full, rich tapestry of sound. Bravo.
Thank you.
Such a great piece. As I've been saying throughout the show today, we're making this special home studio episode during the height of the coronavirus pandemic. And I like to think that music has been a really powerful healing force in the midst of all this. It certainly has been for me. And I just found it really compelling that you, William, discovered a love for music at one of the hardest times in your life. Would you share that story?
So my parents, they were immigrants from South Korea. And during my early years, it was actually pretty hard to come by with income. And for a short period of time, we were actually couch surfing from like place to place. So it's really difficult. And then to add on top of that, it was also difficult for me to adjust in school because I was constantly moving homes at one point. And back then I was really shy and awkward. So I had a really hard time. So school and home life was pretty difficult for me.
Right.
And then through all this like turmoil and struggle, I actually ran across a YouTube video and it was just titled Moonlight Sonata. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was the Car Sonata, but I clicked on it and it turned out to be a music video. And it was piano music. And after listening to it, I was just sitting on my bed, just looking up, and like I just started bawling, like crying. And yeah. I didn't know why at the time. I honestly didn't know why. But then looking back, I think that piece was the first one that really spoke to me. And then from that point on, I was so moved by it that I wanted to pursue it and also try achieving it myself.
So William, you described your parents coming here from Korea. And to me, it seems like in that situation, it must be hard to be a parent and encourage a child to jump into pursuing something like music, which is maybe not the most practical field to go into. So can you talk about your parents and how they feel about this whole thing?
The talk about like having music as a career was a real thing at home. And the first few years were actually quite stressful and difficult. And so during those years, they tried like encouraging me to like study other stuff or like what everyone else does, like become a doctor, engineer, or lawyer, or like one of the more practical fields. And I do enjoy learning at school. It's just, but then the thing was that I didn't find joy in it. Like doing all those assignments, it kind of felt empty for me. And the only way I found anything fulfilling in life during that time was just music.
And so now, have you expressed that to your parents, and how do they respond?
Yes, they want to support me, but they're hesitant about it for a long time. And so I want to prove that I could do it through sheer passion and hard work. And so over the years, I applied to a lot of like competitions and scholarships, like the Herbert Zipper Scholarship. And towards the later years of high school, I actually started achieving a lot. And through that, I think they have some security, because I think for the most part, they just wanted security for like my future. And I would totally understand that.
Yeah. I mean, what better way to show your commitment to something than to go out and apply for those scholarships and achieve those fellowships? Well, we've been impressed too, and that's why you're getting the Jack Kent Cook Scholarship from us. What do you plan to do with that?
I'm planning on building a mini home studio for film music, and also buy a bunch of books and scores for me to have, because I also want to build a personal collection of scores to study.
Awesome. That'll be a very cool thing for you to amass. I wish you all the best. Things are just going to keep going great for you, William.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. The 17-year-old pianist up next approaches the piano with the power of an athlete, which isn't surprising because he's also the captain of his swim team. And as I was watching him perform over video conference, I was amazed by these massive hands that he has. So what better rep for him to play than the music of Franz Liszt? His name is Ryan Gannon, and he's from Redwood City, California. Ryan, I'm so impressed by the way you play this Liszt. First of all, tell everyone the name of this piece.
So this is Liszt's paraphrase on Verdi's Rigoletto. And Rigoletto is an opera in 3 acts by Giuseppe Verdi. And that opera was written based on the play L'Oiseau Muse by Victor Hugo. So a lot of generations of art kind of coming into this one piece.
Yeah, and when Liszt would, you know, write a piece like this, it was sort of the 19th century version of covering a pop song on the piano. You know, these tunes would have been the hits of the time. So this paraphrase comes from a famous scene in Act 3. Describe what's going on here and what our audience should be listening for in terms of the characters.
Right here is a quartet of 4 characters. The Duke of Mantua, who's a tenor. Rigoletto, who's like a hunchbacked court jester. He's a baritone. Gilda, who is Rigoletto's beautiful daughter, who is also in love with the Duke, and Maddalena, who is the Duke's lover, who Gilda is jealous of. So right here, it's just kind of like Maddalena interacting with the Duke and kind of flirting, and Gilda getting really upset,
right?
And Rigoletto, the overprotective father, getting upset in return.
Can you play and demonstrate some of these particular characters so we can get a sense of their personalities in the music?
Yep. So first I'm going to play the intro of the Duke in Liszt's paraphrase. So the Duke is kind of this like deep voice, charismatic and pretty powerful. And he has that sense of authority in the way that he sings.
Yeah, I love that melody so much. And it sits right in the center of the piano. It's a nice juicy spot for a piano transcription. What's next?
Well, actually, what comes before the Duke is Maddalena. So that goes like this.
Very cheeky, very flirty.
Yeah.
Who are we going to hear next?
We can go to Gilda. So the Duke and Maddalena are kind of flirting, and then Gilda's watching through a peephole and getting very upset.
Yeah, and those half steps are her just sort of crying out and feeling so heartbroken at what she's witnessing.
Yeah, it really makes you go with her.
And finally?
Rigoletto's last. And right after he sees Gilda becoming sad after she sees Maddalena and the Duke flirting, he gets very overprotective, as you can hear here.
Cool. Well, now that we've met all of our characters, let's hear them interact. Give us some of this drama.
Okay, here goes.
Thank you.
We heard 17-year-old pianist Ryan Gannon perform the paraphrase on Verdi's Rigoletto by Franz Liszt. To take us out of the program today, we're journeying back into From the Top's 20-year archive to enjoy a flashback finale. Only a couple of times in From the Top's history have young musicians approached us as a horn trio, but back in 2005, the teenage Tusforo horn trio from the Chicago area amazed us with a performance of the scherzo from the horn trio in E-flat major by Johannes Brahms. The members of the group are Anna Spina on French horn, Hannah Stewart on violin, and pianist Kevin Chang. Before they take it away, I want to thank all of the young musicians on today's program for virtually inviting us into their homes during this unprecedented time. And I hope you enjoyed visiting the kids and hearing them play as much as I did. Thank you so much for being with us. Please join From the Top next week. And now, here's Brahms.
From the Top is written and produced by Tim Banker and Tom Vagley, with music director Megan Swan. The production manager for this episode is Erin Nolan, and sound guru John Escobar led us as technical director through the challenge of making this recording happen along with Chris Rando. The executive director is Gretchen Nielsen. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need, jkcf.org. From the Massachusetts Cultural Council, a state agency connecting young people with the arts in schools and in their communities. Learn more at massculturalcouncil.org. And from the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org.